Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively white people.
Well, I'm getting higher next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke that, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
Oh, that's Kevin Sabet from Project Sam in that clip. We're going to hear more from him. Well, I'm going to read more from him coming up in later in this hour. But right now, welcome to Toker Talk Radio. I'm Radical Russ. We were just talking about that appearance by Attorney General Jeff Sessions on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I'm just checking out the chat room. John Thomas in the chat room brings up a good question. What was that thing that Jeff Sessions said that the federal government couldn't take over from the locals?
It's not possible for the federal government, of course, to take over everything the local police used to do in a state that's legalized it.
And that's absolutely correct. That's known as the doctrine of commandeering. You can't, the federal government can't commandeer state or local law enforcement to enforce federal law. They can't force the states to pass laws to criminalize marijuana possession or cultivation or sales or anything. The federal government cannot command the states to set certain laws, cannot deputize their law enforcement to enforce federal laws. That's never been in doubt. We've all agreed to that. But the point of Hugh Hewitt's question has nothing to do with whether or not the federal government would be sending in enough DEA agents to bust kids standing on the corner selling a dime bag or smoking a joint. Nobody has ever posited that that would be the case. Even back in the day, before legalization and even before medical marijuana, you didn't have the feds busting people for simple possession. Generally speaking, unless you're Chris Goldstein trying to make a point smoking a joint outside Liberty Bell, it's another story. But what could happen, and what Hugh Hewitt brought forth there, was the point that it wouldn't take a whole lot of action by the Department of Justice. It wouldn't take boots on the ground and DEA agents raiding places to send shockwaves through the marijuana industry. And we know Jeff Sessions does not like marijuana.
And I'm not in favor of legalization of marijuana.
He thinks that legalization leads to a ubiquity of marijuana.
I don't think we're going to be a better community if marijuana is sold in every corner grocery store.
Which, I don't know if Sessions has even visited any of our legal marijuana states. Here in Oregon, I can't even buy hard liquor at the grocery store, much less weed at the grocery store. The states that have legal marijuana have adults-only shops that are segregated from all other shopping, and the only thing you can get there is weed and maybe a couple of accessories, and that's it. Weed in every grocery store. Again, trying to just make a mountain out of a molehill to try to inflate the fear among the general public that's ignorant of this, thinking that legalization means you're going to have, you know, eighths of weed being sold at the 7-Eleven, and we all know that's not true. But again, in this discussion with Hugh Hewitt, it is pretty scary that the talk radio host is talking about a simple, effective, cheap, non-resource-intensive way of being able to send a message to the marijuana movement.
No, it would, but it would take literally one racketeering, influence, corrupt organization prosecution to take all the money from one retailer, and the message would be sent. I mean, if you want to send that message, you can send it. Do you think you're going to send it?
And this is why I'm scared, is because you realize that talk radio is running our country now. We are now living in a talk radio administration. Steve Bannon came up from Breitbart. Mike Pence used to be one of them right-wing talk radio hosts that used to go off against global warming and such. The Stephen Miller has been a guest numerous times on conservative talk radio. This is the mindset. This is the knowledge base of this administration, is these right-wing wackos on talk radio like Hugh Hewitt. So if Hugh Hewitt is coming up with the idea that, hey, throw a RICO suit out there, take down a Harborside with a RICO suit, take down a what's that place in, oh crap, I can't even remember, Denver Relief, there we go, name finally came to me. Take down one of these big guys in one of these states with a RICO case, and then all these other guys are going to go, whoa, wait a minute. All the investors are going to go, hey, hold on. Could send a shockwave through the entire marijuana industry.
Well, we'll be evaluating how we want to handle that. I think it's a little more complicated than one RICO case, I got to tell you.
It may be. But one RICO case would be enough to really start the ball rolling. It wouldn't require a whole bunch of DEA agents or manpower. Just a matter of typing up, filing a suit, sending that letter out. Now, some people will say they wouldn't want to do that because then they'd just be left with grow and give. They could shut down all the commerce, but then people would still be able to grow. Oh, so legalization would end up looking like the worst of the black market? Maybe that's their goal. We'll talk more about this when we come back. Stay tuned.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Mom, Dad,
we're pretty close, right?
Guess what? I'm 2 seconds away from kicking you out of my life.
You don't even recognize me.
And pretty soon,
someone's gonna try to get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it? You're gonna have to make me tell you where I am
and who I'm with. Every day.
No matter how much I fight you.
Don't like it?
Tough.
You gotta be the grown-up.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day. Exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer. Or email firedublawyer@gmail.com.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalrust.com. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
You're a loony.
A public service message from The Russ Belville Show.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:35 and after the hour, and we were discussing these comments by Jeff Sessions, our Attorney General, on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. And I got folks again in the chat room and throughout my various social media feeds saying it would be political suicide. They won't dare go after recreational marijuana. It'd be political suicide. And you could make a good case for that. You got a Gallup poll showing 60% of the people support marijuana legalization. You got the Quinnipiac poll showing 71% of the people oppose federal interference in the states that have legalized. However, I think this idea that it would be political suicide to go after state legal marijuana is not quite accurate. Indeed, I think if the Attorney General and the administration filed some sort of lawsuit, injunction, took it to the Supreme Court, let's say, and said, henceforth, all state legal marijuana is off the books. It's all back to prohibition. If they did something like that, yeah, that would be political suicide. Conservatives would say, hey, you're stepping on the will of states, the states' rights. It's anti-federalist. Progressives would say, hey, the people voted on this. It's a harm reduction. I mean, yeah, if they went for a full on blanket, let's shut down all the state programs. You're right. That would be political suicide, which is why I don't think they're going to do that. Instead, what I think they will do is they'll be like the big cats on the Serengeti, you know, when they're chasing down the zebra or the wildebeest to get that big herd. And they kind of scare them. And they scare the herd. And oh, my God, the herd starts to run. And then a few little stragglers go off the side, maybe some of the weak, some of the slow, some of the old. And that's the ones they go get. I think the federal government is going to go after bad actors, or at least those they can paint as bad actors in the cannabis industry. And the goal won't be to shut down the cannabis industry. Nothing so bold and obvious. Instead, it'll be these little attacks, death by a thousand cuts kind of stuff. It's going to be the kind of thing where, well, for example, listen to Jeff Sessions talking about what the big problem is with state legal marijuana.
Places like Colorado, it's just sprung up a lot of different independent entities that are moving marijuana, and it's also being moved interstate, not just
yes.
in the home state. And neighbors are complaining and filed lawsuits against them. So it's a serious matter, in my opinion.
So Sessions thinks this is serious because legalization doesn't stay confined to a state's border. In his mind, it's a petri dish where we have the growth of marijuana escaping the bounds of that and infecting the rest of the states around it. So I could see a Sessions Department of Justice, if it's presented with some case where it's pretty obvious that pounds and pounds and pounds of marijuana that came from a seed-to-sale tracking system get caught somewhere east of Colorado, they'll find that case and go after that grower and that processor. They'll start filing charges against them, and their defense in the court of public opinion will be, we're not trying to shut down state legal marijuana, but the Cole memo clearly says that if they don't keep it in their state, if they don't employ enough safeguards to keep it in their state, that they're subject to federal prosecution. So they won't be shutting down an entire state program. They won't be seen as attacking states' rights. They'll be seen as attacking the bad actors who aren't living up to their end of the bargain that was extended through the 2013 Cole memo. They'll find those kind of cases. They'll find a case where there's some criminal involved with it, with some state legal marijuana operation. They'll blow that case all out of proportion to make the point about the Cole memo. See, I think too many people, when they heard that the Sessions Department of Justice thought that the Cole memo was a decent guidance, I think they heard that as, oh, goody, we've got this list of eight reasons why they won't bust us. Whereas the Sessions-type people look at that and go, aha, a checklist of eight different ways we could justify busting some of them. That's what I think's coming. I think they're going to go after this in little ways. Ways to just kind of slow the progress, thwart the development of the programs, leave a black mark on the idea of legalization in general. I mean, they know they've lost the battle on medical. They're not even going to touch medical. They're down 93-6 on this one in the court of public opinion. They know there's no winning strategy trying to say, like they used to in the old days, we don't smoke opium for medicine. They don't say that much anymore. They know they can't win on the tax revenue stuff anymore because we keep bringing in tax revenue. But it really wouldn't take much to start throwing some monkey wrenches into our development and kind of making things a little more difficult here. The other thing I think is going to be a big part of this push by the Trump administration is a linking of recreational marijuana use to the opiate epidemic. We talked about this yesterday. I wrote, had a big write-up on this. You're going to keep hearing opiate, 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 fentanyl, 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 anytime marijuana is brought up. Mark my words. In fact, we should make a contest out of this. We should make a contest out of this so that anytime you hear Sean Spicer or Jeff Sessions talking about marijuana or asked a question about marijuana, well, we should have a bet that they're going to say heroin or fentanyl or opiate within that response. I think I could make a lot of money on that bet because this is what Jeff Sessions had to say to Hugh Hewitt. Without even a segue or a pause in their conversation about marijuana RICO prosecutions.
And I just came from a big rally in New Hampshire yesterday, Hugh. This opioid problem is just huge. There were 9,000 high school and junior high school students there. A mother I met who had lost a son 3 months before, a child, and she said there were 50 more mothers there who'd lost children speaking to those kids. We've had this huge opioid surge in America. 120 people a day die from drug overdose. And I do believe that, and the president has issued an order to the Department of Justice to crack down on drugs and these international cartels that are moving this fentanyl that's so deadly into our country. And we're going to step up that in a very vigorous way, as I talked to the United States attorneys yesterday by conference call.
So this is something to be concerned about. They're going to keep using the idea of the fentanyl overdoses, the opiate problems. They're going to use that as a way to justify ramping up a war against weed. They're going to push that gateway theory as hard as they can. They're going to bring out every recovering addict they can get in front of a microphone to say, well, my journey started with marijuana and then it led to me using heroin and selling my body and committing crimes and blah, 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 blah. This is what we're going to see. I can predict exactly how this is going to go down. It's really the only kind of, it's only strategy they've got left. As I was saying, people don't believe marijuana's more harmful than alcohol anymore. People don't believe that marijuana's not medical anymore. The very few things they can rely on are people are afraid of stone drivers. People are afraid of their kids smoking pot. And people are afraid of, you know, opiate overdoses. It's about all they got. And the gateway theory hasn't yet died. It's died among those of us in the know, died among those of us who follow this kind of issue. But in the general public's mind, there is still a very strong, strong affinity for this gateway theory. I go all across the country. I hear from people all the time about this. And their attitude is kind of like, well, I know that not everybody who smokes pot moves on to heroin, but you're never going to move on to heroin if you don't smoke pot. That's the way they look at it. If I just don't smoke pot, if I keep my kid from smoking pot, there's no possible way he'll ever get addicted to heroin. Now, that's not true. We know a lot of people that get involved with heroin are people that are coming off of oxycodone or Vicodin or fentanyl or any of these other highly addictive opiates that then run out of a prescription, lose their health care, can't afford it no more, and so they turn to the street to get the cheaper version. So there are people who don't go through a marijuana gateway, who go straight to the addiction to heroin. But that's not generally well known among the public. They think pot is the door that opens you up to the illegal drug experience.
I drank beer heavily and tried drugs enthusiastically.
All right, we're going to take a break because it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for our union-mandated safety briefing. And when we return, the Joker and the Riddler are back. Kevin Sabet and Patrick Kennedy on the opinion pages of the Washington Post. We'll talk all about it when we return. Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Marijuana is three times stronger than it was in the 1980s.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. And blue blashing gurgan, fuffin' der blashing schnurb norbin. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour. One last follow-up on the Jeff Sessions-Hugh Hewitt discussion. Because I got some criticism. Got some criticism online on my post on this, and I think it's reasonable. I'll read it to you. John B. writes, "It's pretty clear that Tom Angel was right on the we will part. It was speech filler, a pause to collect thought, nothing more. When pressed more directly about it again later, Sessions very specifically, as Russ emphasized, said it's more complicated than one RICO case, preceded by we'll be evaluating what to do. Sessions is going to do one thing and one thing only, and that is make ominous sounding veiled threats, and specifically because it sends people like Russ into a panic. But let's be clear, that is all he's going to do. Russ, you have been played again. This guy 100% has your number and the number of everyone else who reacts with such alarm." Okay. That might be true. They may be planning to do absolutely nothing. Keep the complete Obama-era status quo. Let the states move forward with legalization. Let them move forward with medical. Pay no attention to what's going on with marijuana. But from time to time, pop up and say something scary. That could be true. But here's the thing. I've got 4 years, at least, to see whether I'm right or not. And it will only take one prosecution, one letter, one action from the Department of Justice against state legal marijuana in any of 8 legal states for me to be right. You've got to hope nothing changes for the next 4 years for you to be right. Invest wisely. All right, let me get to the subject that I wanted to talk about in this segment. The Joker and the Riddler are back. Kevin Sabet and Patrick Kennedy from Project Samuel, Smart Approaches to Marijuana Use Except Legalization. They're back. And they have an op-ed that they've put up on the Washington Post. And they're peddling the only fear that they've got left in this age of 60% public support for marijuana legalization. And that is conjuring the menace of big marijuana as the reincarnation of big tobacco. This is from their Washington Post article. Quote, "Many marijuana advocates have one goal in mind, to get rich. What we need, therefore, is a federal enforcement strategy that not only promotes human rights and social justice, but also actively targets and deters the special interests driving big marijuana." end quote. Well, I don't know about everybody else, but almost all marijuana advocates have indeed one goal in mind. It's not to get rich. It's treating marijuana consumers like we treat alcohol consumers. Hell, most of us have been marijuana advocates long before any money could be made legally from it. This is just a smokescreen. It's all part of Sabet's strategy, a long-term strategy, to obstruct and repeal reforms of state marijuana laws. He's lost the battle on medical marijuana. 93% of the public now believes cannabis is a safe medicine when recommended by a physician. And he can't convince the people that marijuana is terribly dangerous. 87% of the public finds it no more dangerous than alcohol. 74% finding it safer than alcohol, with 13 saying they're about the same. Sabet and Kennedy make the argument that the federal government needs to intervene in the states that have legalized adult use marijuana because, quote, the consequences of legalization are not confined by geographic borders, end quote. They note the complaints of Nebraska and Oklahoma that legal marijuana from Colorado is streaming across their borders. They insist that marijuana is not a states' rights issue for this reason, and that the Supreme Court's 2003 ruling in Gonzalez v. Raich regarding medical marijuana in California, that decision empowers the feds to begin reining in the recreational states. Now, it is true that the feds reserve the right to prosecute any state marijuana operators, and that Gonzalez v. Raich case made it clear. I mean, Angel Raich was the woman behind that case. She was a California medical marijuana patient with a brain tumor who saw a California doctor who recommended that she use California marijuana. The seeds were produced in California. The soil was Californian. The water was from California. The plant was Californian. She used implements, shovels and buckets, and everything she used to produce and prepare the marijuana came from California. She only used the marijuana for her own medical purposes, no commercial purposes, didn't share or sell the marijuana with anyone else. In other words, the absolute perfect test case to show the Supreme Court that this has nothing to do with the Interstate Commerce Clause. There's no interstate. Everything was from California and in California, used by a Californian. And there's no commerce. It was medical. She wasn't selling it. She wasn't giving it. She wasn't trading it. And yet the Supreme Court decided in 2003 that that didn't matter, that the Interstate Commerce Clause allows the federal government to supersede California's medical marijuana law even when no interstate occurred and even when no commerce occurred, because it might. It could. I'm serious, folks. The government did not have to prove that Angel Raich was interstate or commerce at any time, nor that it was likely she would be interstate or commerce at any time, nor that anyone ever had been interstate or commerce at any time. They merely posited that if it could happen, the federal government has a right to ban it. Yeah, that's really the decision, folks, behind the Raich case affirmed the federal government's right to prosecute states that change their marijuana laws under the Controlled Substances Act. And it's a really interesting precedent that they relied on. See, if you go back in our history, you'll recall that we banned alcohol at one time, right? Remember how we did that? Constitutional amendment. You know why? Because we had to. Back in the 1910s and 1920s, and throughout all American history before that, there was no enumerated right of the federal government to be able to ban anything. The Constitution clearly lays out that there's an interstate commerce clause, that if there's business to be conducted between the states, either the states themselves or entities within those states, that the federal government has the right to regulate the commerce that takes place. So it can put tariffs and taxes and regulations and testing and labeling requirements on booze and corn and, you know, Triscuits and whatever else, right? And if it's going across state lines, the federal government can regulate it. So up until the 1920s or so, the federal government didn't think, or people didn't think you could ban things under that Commerce Clause, because if something cannot be bought or sold or traded or produced, there is no commerce in such a thing. Right? If it's completely forbidden, what commerce would the government be regulating? So there was a need then to pass the 18th Amendment to provide the constitutional right for the government to be able to ban alcohol. Our government's based on this. Our constitution's based on the idea that the government is one of limited enumerated powers. Here's a list of things the government can do, and if it's not in that list, the government can't do it. And ban shit isn't in that list. So we passed the 18th Amendment. It banned alcohol. We passed the 21st Amendment. It repealed that ban. And still, people believed that while the government could regulate commerce, it couldn't ban things. Then we get ourselves to World War II. Now, when World War II happened, the United States, when we got bombed at Pearl Harbor, I should say, we didn't do much about World War II until then. But when World War II came to America's shores and we got serious about joining this war effort, the federal government made a whole lot of orders, dictated a whole lot of directives to private companies on what they could and couldn't do. As far as, you know, Ford Company had to stop making cars and start building tanks, and the airplane, Boeing and other manufacturers had to start making warplanes, all that kind of stuff. And part of what they did during World War II is there were shortages of stuff, shortages of sugar, shortages of meat, shortages of wheat. So they instituted rationing programs. In fact, the tagline for some of that was meatless, wheatless, sweetless, right? As far as what they would be giving up or rationing to ensure that the soldiers would have enough of those products. So throughout World War II, there was a rationing system on wheat. And you were allowed to grow X amount of wheat, X number of acres of wheat as a commercial farmer. And, you know, so much of that went to the war effort and so forth. But you were limited. There was a ration as to how much you could grow. So there came this farmer who decided that, okay, I've got my X number of acres of wheat that the government will allow me to grow commercially. But over here, I'm going to grow another Y number of acres, a smaller, much smaller number, but a small acreage that will be my personal wheat, just for me and my family. Now, we're not going to sell that wheat. That's just for us to bake bread and, you know, have our own wheat. We won't exceed the commercial wheat ration. We'll still have our X number of acres over there commercially, and we'll follow the law over there. No problem. But over here, we're just going to make some wheat for ourselves. You know, just our personal wheat stash. This case made it all the way up to the Supreme Court because authorities said, now hold on. We can't let you just have personal wheat. Yeah, maybe you're going to be good about it, but what's to stop the next guy from having his 10,000 acres of wheat and then throwing together another 20 acres of wheat and saying it's personal, but then selling it on the wheat market? Federal government's got a problem with that, and the federal government should be able to stop that because that would be interstate commerce. I mean, we can set these wheat rations and these wheat limits on the commercial thing because that's commerce between the states as far as wheat going from border to border and such. But if we let you do personal wheat, that could end up in the interstate commerce. We can't tell commercial wheat from regular wheat. Wheat is wheat. Wheat looks the same. And that argument won the day. The Supreme Court decided in a case called Wickard v. Filburn that because the farmer growing the personal wheat could take that wheat and sell it on the interstate market, even though he never did, even though he couldn't prove he would, but since it's possible, the federal government can ban that. Now, it took a long time before the law came around for the federal government to recognize, wait a minute, if we can use the Commerce Clause to ban stuff, we don't have to pass prohibition amendments like we did with alcohol. Now, the Wickard case was in the 40s, It didn't come until late 60s, 1969, when Timothy Leary sued about the Marijuana Tax Act, said it violated the Fifth Amendment and was right, till they turned around in 1970 and built the Controlled Substances Act, built on this whole Wickard idea that you could ban stuff because it falls under interstate commerce. We'll finish up that story and talk more about Kevin Sabet and Patrick Kennedy and their reefer madness when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabet since 2012. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 37 after the hour. We left off, we were talking about how the federal government is able to use the Interstate Commerce Clause to ban marijuana thanks to this case called Wickard v. Filburn. It was cited in the 2013 Gonzalez v. Raich case. Because Angel Raich had sued, saying the federal government can't stop me from growing my own personal medical marijuana that wasn't interstate and wasn't commerce. And the feds came back and said, no, look at this Wickard v. Filburn here thing. See this, decision in Wickard v. Filburn said that this farmer growing his own personal wheat, we could stop him from growing personal wheat because personal wheat is fungible with commercial wheat. Fungible meaning you can't tell one from the other. They're all the same. We wouldn't know if the guy took some wheat from his personal acres and sold them as commercial wheat. That decision was used to justify banning Angel Raich from using her medical marijuana, or at least saying the feds could try to stop her from using her medical marijuana because marijuana is fungible. We wouldn't be able to tell Angel Raich's medical marijuana from a baggie of commercial marijuana being sold in the streets of Chicago. Actually, we would, but that's another story. So that was the justification. Marijuana is fungible. And whether or not Angel Raich ever was going to sell her medical marijuana, whether it was going to happen, whether she had ever done it, whether she was planning to do it, is irrelevant. The mere fact that it's possible she could sell her medical marijuana made it a violation of that precedent of Wickard v. Filburn. And so now Jeff Sessions, in that most recent clip I've been playing, you know, and a lot of these clips where he talks about enforcing federal law, it goes back to the fact that, yes, they can. The Raich decision would make it legal for the federal government to go after any of the state recreational marijuana entities. So it's very, very possible. But this was a long tangent in me talking about Kevin Sabet and Project Samuel. He and Patrick Kennedy have got an op-ed up on the Washington Post right now. And they're kind of, I don't know if they're really thinking through their latest rhetorical ploy, because they're making the argument that the federal government needs to intervene in the states that have legalized adult use marijuana because, quote, The consequences of legalization are not confined by geographic borders, end quote. And again, they note that Nebraska and Oklahoma are complaining. They sued at the Supreme Court, even though the suit wasn't heard. They sued the Supreme Court. They sued Colorado because all this legal Colorado weed's coming across their border. Sabet and Kennedy are insisting that marijuana is not a state's rights issue because of the precedent of Gonzales v. Raich. Now, it is true that the federal government has the right to prosecute those state marijuana operators, but I'm afraid for the Riddler and the Joker that appealing for federal intervention is a gambit that is going to backfire on this dastardly duo. We already mentioned how 71% of the public opposes the federal government intervening in the states that have legalized marijuana. Even the 83% Republican pot-hating Idaho Senate rejected a call for federal intervention in neighboring Washington. America, whether Jeff Sessions believes it or not, America believes that marijuana is a state's rights issue. And furthermore, for the conservatives who hew to a state's rights ideology, this argument of Sabet and Kennedy's that one state's policies cross another state's borders is exactly the argument progressives like me use to counter conservative arguments rejecting federal gun control legislation. I mean, just like Nebraska can't stop Colorado pot from pouring over its border, Illinois can't stop Indiana guns from pouring over its border. Similar arguments get made when states claim the right to set their own environmental and immigration policies. The conservatives that hear Sabet and Kennedy's anti-federalist messaging on marijuana are going to reject that. They know that if they adhere to this principle of states' rights or anti-states' rights principle, saying the feds need to come in because stuff crosses the border, they know that's going to be a problem when the next gun control debate comes up, when the next immigration debate comes up, when the next health care debate comes up. This is going to be a tough road to hoe. And Sabet, he's also built this message to try to appeal to liberals, too. The big tobacco part of it. By invoking the specter of big tobacco, the whipping boy of the left, Sabet hopes to play this kinder, gentler drug war card of reduced penalization and forced rehab and evaluations and probations and drug courts. He's going to try to push that for the pitiable cannabis consumers. But for the contemptible cannabis capitalists, no, that's going to be all about increased opposition. He's going to try to separate, going to make it that the industry is the bad guy, not necessarily those of us sick, deluded, addicted consumers. Here's a quote from the Sabet and Kennedy piece. Quote, issues of federalism aside, federal enforcement would serve as a needed check against an exploding for-profit marijuana industry that often prioritizes profits over public health and safety. In states with legal marijuana, special interests have built industrial-scale growing and dangerous THC extraction operations and are looking to advertise the product on television. They're targeting minority communities to sell their products and, increasingly, financing politicians to do their bidding. There are now more pot shops concentrated in poor communities of color in Denver than anywhere else. End quote. Well, of course, Sabet and Kennedy are neglecting to point out that the NIMBYs, the not in my backyard people, the city councilors and the zoning commissions, often relegate pot shops to the industrial areas of town that are predominantly where poor communities are situated. You can't blame the marijuana industry for putting all its pot shops near the minority communities if that's the only place you let them put the pot shops. Nor have they bothered to ask any of the people of color in those neighborhoods what they prefer on the street corner, the regulated pot shop paying taxes and checking IDs, or the weed dealer for the violent gang who's packing heat, who'll sell to anybody. I don't know. I think I'd prefer the pot shop. I think that might be better. Can you imagine Kevin Sabet and Patrick Kennedy going back to 1927 and telling people we can't repeal alcohol prohibition? My God, do you want to have stores on the corner selling alcohol to people as the gang drives by with their Tommy gun shooting up the streets? Now, of course, Sabet and Kennedy also lament that the hundreds of millions of dollars in marijuana tax revenue that has come to Washington and Colorado isn't as much as was promised. Oh, that's the problem. Used to be, Kevin Sabet would come on the TV and tell us how the tax revenue for marijuana would never, ever cover its social costs. Oh my God, for alcohol, every dollar in alcohol and tobacco taxes we receive, they produce $10 in social costs. Remember that? You remember Sabet saying that every damn weekend on the TV? But now that Colorado and Washington have brought in over $200 million in taxes, you don't hear so much of that every dollar is going to cost $10 in costs. Because then he'd have to try to justify where $2 billion in costs are. I don't think he could justify $200 million in costs. He can't even justify a break even on this. So now the argument is, well, it's not as much as they promised. It's not as much as they promised. Like telling a starving guy, hey, man, you're starving? I'll bring you a pizza. And then you bring him 2/3 of a pizza. And the starving man goes, what the hell is this? You promised a whole goddamn pizza. Okay. The problem they're not recognizing, and actually they recognize this. This is just really a distraction on these guys' part. They're trying to distract people from the fact that marijuana tax revenue, regardless of what was promised, regardless of what was brought in, is infinitely more than we were bringing in before legalization. Let's see, $200 million divided by zero. Oh yeah, that's infinity. Yeah, infinity. We are bringing infinite more tax dollars in from marijuana than we ever have. Infinite. Then, of course, Sabet and Kennedy have to go off on all these fake stats, this fake news from the Rocky Mountain high-intensity drug trafficking area and other prohibitionist organs. They say there's marijuana causing more crashes. They're saying more youth are using marijuana. They're saying employers can't find enough clean workers to pass piss tests. They're saying there's more people becoming addicted to marijuana. These are absolutely counterfactual fake news bits. The roads in the legal marijuana states are safer than the states next to them. The fatalities in the marijuana states are still lower than before legalization. The piss tests failed for marijuana tell employers absolutely nothing. They just tell them, hey, you've got an employee who enjoys a legal substance. Ooh, we've got the rate of marijuana dependence has remained steady for over a decade. And no more youth, at least the older teenagers, the seniors, the 11th graders, no more of them are smoking marijuana than before. And among the younger teenagers, 10th grade and below, fewer of them are smoking now. So everything he said, absolutely wrong. But here is the ultimate failure of the whole Sabet and Kennedy Big Tobacco 2.0 argument. The idea that we got to stop the commercialization of marijuana. Here's the big flaw. Big Tobacco had to lie about its product because it's extremely harmful and powerfully addictive. Marijuana is neither. Big Tobacco had to market to kids because an adult who tries a cigarette will cough and choke and recognize there's no real value in this and a whole lot of harm. But a kid, when he takes his first cigarette, he'll power through that coughing and choking, trying to conform to peer pressure, trying to mimic an adult activity to seem cool. They had to market to kids. Adults won't take it up. But an adult who first tries marijuana, well, they usually enjoy the experience and they gain some benefit from it. The medicinal properties of cannabis are beneficial to all consumers, regardless of the reason for their consumption. And this is corroborated in the explosion of people over age 50 who are now taking up marijuana post-legalization. You don't see a whole lot of over 50-year-olds taking up cigarette smoking for the first time, do you? Big Tobacco had to lie to adults because adults who continued to use the product were experiencing great health problems and dropping dead from lung cancer. But an adult who uses marijuana will find their health improve. And if you do just a little due diligence, you'll find out that marijuana even helps protect against some cancers and helps to improve lung function. All of the detriments Sabet and Kennedy list about mental health and academic achievement come from studies of adolescents, not adults. Nobody's suggesting legalization for teenagers. We're suggesting taking as much of the marijuana market as we can away from the criminals who sell untested products to kids and turning that over to state-regulated businesses that pay taxes and only sell to adults. We gotta take a break. We'll be back to close up shop when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
We have four times the incarceration rate on a percentage basis of any country in the world. In second place is New Zealand.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you to say that.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barack has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 53 after the hour as we close up shop here on the Russ Belville Show. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. Have another full show for you. But before we get out of here, one last little bit of data. So try and imagine what the worst and the best states for medical marijuana are. Which state in the union do you think is the worst state for a medical marijuana patient? And which state do you think is the best state for a medical marijuana patient? Well, this isn't just an academic exercise. This is the subject of the new report released by Americans for Safe Access, the nation's leading medical marijuana advocacy organization, that rates all 50 states in the District of Columbia on their medical marijuana programs and laws. They rate them based on patient rights, navigation, like how easy is it to get through the process, access, how can you actually get medical marijuana, functionality, does the program really work, and product safety, how safe are the marijuana products. So they evaluate each one of those five criteria on a scale of 1 to 100, or 0 to 100, I should say, and then they take that average score and add to it a bonus that gives them a total score. And you can download this report from Americans for Safe Access if you want to read the whole thing. But based on this, they give you a number, an average number, that ranges from 0 to 100. And from that, they grant letter grades. 90 and higher is an A, 80 and higher is a B, and so on, right? Just like school. Well, no state got an A. According to Americans for Safe Access, no state provides superior medical marijuana protections, access, availability, navigation, and so forth. No state is an A. But guess which state in America is the number one state, according to Americans for Safe Access, what is the number one state for medical marijuana? Did you say California? Nope, not California. California only got an 87, a B plus. Did you say Oregon? Nope, not Oregon. Oregon got an 86.2, a B. Could it be, if it's not Colorado, not California, who could it be? For the second straight year, Americans for Safe Access has rated Illinois as the nation's best medical marijuana program, giving it an average score of 89.8, just narrowly missing an A. Got a B plus. They say Illinois is the number one state. They say Illinois gets a 94 for patients' protections, patients' rights, compared to a 77 in California and a 62 in Colorado. Navigation of the program in Illinois is a 90 compared to 95 California and 82 Colorado. Now, that would mean like 95 for California is because really you just walk into a doctor's office and say you got anxiety and he writes you out a recommendation. Boom, you're good to go. For access, Illinois got a 68 compared to California's 97, Colorado's 83. Because again, in California, anybody who wants it can get it. Not everybody can in Illinois. Functionality. Program in Illinois gets an 81. California got 97. Colorado got 93. And for product safety, Illinois got a 91. California got a 59. Colorado a 74. Again, 59 because there's no, you know, they got a lot of growers, not a lot of standards. Then Illinois got 25 bonus points compared to Colorado's 10 and California's 10. And that led Illinois for the second straight year to be Americans for Safe Access's designation of the best medical marijuana program in America. Now, I don't have any science on this, and I'm not going to do a 100-point evaluation for all these categories. I'm just going to go by what people tell me. I have yet to meet anybody, any patient, any advocate, any reformer who would tell you with a straight face that life is better for an Illinois medical marijuana patient than one in California or Colorado. I'm sorry. This whole rating system is based on this idea that I believe Americans for Safe Access is all about this, you know, standardization and having all these regulations, and when really the best medical marijuana program is legalization. Every state that's got legal marijuana should be an A in that list. What is a better protection for patient rights than no longer being a criminal, no longer being subject to search and seizure, no longer being subject to tickets, no longer having a probable cause based on the smell or sight of marijuana? What could protect a patient's rights better than legalization? Navigation of the system. You know what the navigation of the system is when marijuana is legal? Showing your driver's license. And then you get to buy marijuana. Access. You know what it's like in a legal state to access medical marijuana? You walk into a store and you show your driver's license. Functionality. You know how the medical marijuana functions in a state that has legalization? You walk into a store and show your driver's license. Once again, this continued separation of the people who have a societally approved decent reason to smoke pot versus those of us who don't have a societally approved decent reason to smoke pot only does a disservice to both sides. It restricts patients unnecessarily, and it demonizes recreational consumers unnecessarily. One struggle, one plant, one goal. I'm Radical Russ. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, we'll see you tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. you take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Okay, maybe you're high, too.